Good afternoon, and welcome to the Wilf Wake-Up Call. I'm Tana Hartman, your host today. Unfortunately, Lori Hoyt is ill and couldn't be with us. Our intrepid engineer is Dick Paddock, and our guest today is Dave Lipman, the intrepid Dave Lipman, satirist, comedian, and musician. And Dave, you've been doing this for a long time. Back, on your website, it said you started in 1969, and with some notoriety for being an unindicted co-conspirator. An unindicted co-conspirator for singing about the Guatemala sweepstakes at a rally preceding the escorting of a recruiter from the United Fruit Company off campus. So, how did you get? I mean, you. I'm not asking so much how you got interested in music. That I think comes with probably since you were born. But how did you get political?
Because I couldn't figure out why there weren't any grapes in the house. And my mother explained to me that we didn't buy them because if we did, it encouraged very bad working conditions for our landed immigrant brothers and sisters from down south. And then she had to explain to me what working conditions were, in fact, what work was. And that was more of my education than 4 years of high school, probably. Although high school had an effect on me in terms of being a slightly kind of a, almost you might say, rebel. I guess I had problems with socialization. And, for example, if you had a history teacher who told you that you weren't going to talk about the Vietnam War, which was then the current going thing, then you had this suddenly growing feeling about how high school had some socializing purpose to make you ignorant. And since in those days we thought adults were all ignorant, and we reckoned most adults had gone to high school, we figured that was the cause of school. Yeah.
Annoying. Sorry, we have a slight technical glitch here. We're still getting something's airing. And, there we go. Okay, good. Thank you, Dick, for doing
You're
that. You also had a song covered by Country Joe of Country Joe and the Fish, right?
Yeah, he was like the political edge of all of the rock bands in the Bay Area, and I didn't know him at that time. But got to know him and other members of that group who went on to other interesting political music careers. The bass player went on to write all the stuff for the San Francisco Mime Troupe for years and years.
So you were living out there. I was living out there then, too. That's interesting. Okay, so.
Well, I was in high school in Sacramento, and actually the whole goal of the high school administration was to keep the revolution from coming over the hill from San Francisco into Sacramento. it was like, figuratively, the embattlements there were at the river, you see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I lived in Sacramento. I worked
in
the State House for Ronald Reagan.
We must
Reagan.
Talk. Are we talking yet? Oh, Reagan. Well, that was the point at which things kind of came apart. My father actually lost his job to that governor, and that's what brought my family back east, and that's how I came to be living now in the New York area, actually. It's because.
Okay.
I was raised in Stockton.
Stockton. Yeah. So we used to talk about Lodi, Stockton, and Delano back in the drug days. Mm-hmm. Lodi, Stockton, Delano.
Oh, okay. I was pretty innocent back then.
But those were the days when the farm workers, as I said, were very active, and they were they had a committee organized in Sacramento, and I went down from high school with a tape recorder about yay big, like, you know, and a lot of pounds, and took that thing down there. I don't know how I carried that. And I interviewed this guy who headed up the local committee and met my first radicals and brought it back to the school. We had a civil liberties club, and everybody gathered around and listened to this alien force coming through, representing the farm workers through the magic of reel-to-reel tape. And I was, and that's even before I got involved at all in the Vietnam War stuff. But that did come along quickly on the heels of that. And I actually played my first rally with my little folk and roll band there for my mother's illegal social work strike in Sacramento. They all got fired, so the music didn't help much.
So your parents were, or your mother at least, was politically
aware. Well, being
aware
in the public sector and, you know, in a helping, it's not a helping profession, but it's in that sector of society that's trying to take care of the less fortunate. And it's not like she was a nurse, but there she was being a social worker. So naturally, they went up against the state bureaucracy. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, it was actually a preview of what was to come in terms of squashing public sector unionization, right?
Right.
That we see now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the grapes was a preview of what's been going on lately with tomatoes and the Immokalee workers.
Yes.
And I actually can just buy wine now from Trader Joe's for the first time in several months because they just finally signed. Since I wrote them,
oh, we can buy again.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
It's
I saw
done.
That a few days ago.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Because I wrote some very nice, nasty letters to them.
Okay.
Very polite.
Well, good, tell me, because I haven't been buying wine there for a while, but now I could go back and buy wine.
Well, and you should announce that that's why you're coming back.
Okay, I will.
I don't know that, I mean, it's good to tell the individual clerks, but even a letter to the...
Yeah.
In fact, I'm thinking of writing a letter to the PR flax and saying, you know, this letter you wrote me a while back that said you were doing everything correctly already, you just didn't want to be accountable. Do you want to take that back now or what?
Good old Trader Joe's.
Okay. That's been kind of a theme, right, for a lot of activists is what you don't buy that decade or that year, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's true. What we're boycotting or, right. All right. So you, that started you off, and it looks like you pretty much stayed political. You didn't sort of, you know, get mainstreamed and then go back to being political.
I took a break, but it wasn't into the mainstream. It was into some explorations of arts. Avant-garde things and experimental arts in the 70s, of a wide variety of things that I sort of incorporated when I went back into more of a political focus, so that my music might have suffered a little bit from knowing too much of too many styles.
Okay.
I think some people would say that's a problem. But in terms of a career, that never quite appeared on the horizon.
Okay, all right.
But now, when I came here, much later, after I'd been on the road for 20 years...
When did you come here?
I came in the 90s, and I was a student in grad school in the communications department. And I did a minor in folklore and went off to Arkansas to do some folklore work. I had a job, and they had just come into the 19th century. Those of you out there on the internet from Arkansas listening, eat me. Anyway,
okay.
I love the people, don't get me wrong, the folks that I was responsible to in terms of their arts and crafts and music and things. That's all That's all fine, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's perfect. It was the administrators who didn't belong in that field of folklore in the first place.
Okay.
And were there to muck it up. So that was kind of a sad, sorry situation. But it was, we're talking Arkansas Delta. And people used to tell me that over there where they lived in Mississippi, in the Mississippi Delta, it was much more liberal than the Arkansas side.
Really?
And that was basically my experience.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I would not have imagined that, but then I know very little or nothing about Arkansas. So, but you have, I mean, you lived here for 10 years or more, and then you moved back up to the Northeast.
Yeah. Well, I had started touring again when they decided to put another bush up in the big house.
Yeah.
Well, the big house where it should be. But
right.
And that called back into the fray my character, George Shrub, the singing CIA agent.
Oh, yes.
He,
I saw you
he had to go
that.
One more go round, because as long as they were going to have bushes, there might as well be shrubs.
Okay.
And that's what there was. So I started touring out of here again in various circuits around the country as I had before grad school. But I did gravitate towards New York. I've got family up there, and now I've become much more involved locally in local solidarity groups and different kinds of anti-war activist groups. And,
okay.
And there's New York. I mean, that's a whole country right there. Right?
Yes,
so,
it is. Yeah.
So I don't get out as much as I do, but I enjoy it more because it's a little more finite. I'm not out for 6 weeks at a time.
Okay. Yeah, that's a rough life. My brother's a professional musician. I know the touring life gets really rough. So you are, what is it you're working on now? I know you're on tour right now. You're gracing us with your presence, and you're going to be tonight at the Community Church in Chapel Hill, and that's at 7, starts at 7:30. It is sponsored by, what did I do? I printed it out and forgot to bring it.
Balance
the Balance and
Accuracy
in Journalism, and is it Peace Action, or...
It's the Coalition for Peace and Justice.
The Coalition, sorry.
Yeah.
Coalition for Peace and Justice, and that would be tonight at the Community Church at 7:30. Turn out. It ought to be great. So tell us, are you going to sing for us?
Oh, you know, they want to know what the music is like. It'll sound like this, a lot like this. I can do an imitation of what it'll sound like. Glaciers roasting because of climate liars. Jack Frost lost his way, God knows. Yuletide carols sung while we perspire, and folks dressed up like, well, too hot for clothes. Come listen to a story about Alberta tar sands and western province of wheat-growing lands. Tycoons found a compliment for their blue blood. Down in the ground was some tar sand bread. Oil, that is. Dirty oil. Pollution, tea. Toxic sludge. I never swim in ammonia if it's mixed with cyanide. And it'll sound and smell and feel something like that.
Oh,
and it goes on like that for 25 minutes. But I'll do the short version tonight.
Okay. The short version of
that. That was a command, a commissioned song. The folks working on the Keystone XL pipeline stuff,
great.
Not Senator Sessions so much, but some of the people from the other side asked me to write
yes.
that up for them.
Okay.
It's what we call a commissioned position paper.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, all right. Aside from the tar sands, which we've all just come through a rash of, I swear, must have had 50 emails a day from people saying, oh, got to call, got to write, got to do this, got to email. And we've all been in this flurry of activity this week, and I don't know what's happened. Does anybody know what's happening right this minute?
I know what happened yesterday. But we can talk about that later because I don't want to interrupt your...
Yeah, they're trying to push it through again and tack
yes,
it onto this,
right.
that, and the other
well,
bill.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Well, there was a group of 40 people that showed up at the federal courthouse in Raleigh yesterday. We got a chance to talk to a rather curt, uninformative aide to Senator Hagan.
Okay, but nothing got passed last night.
Not that I've heard. I've been looking... And I haven't
yeah,
seen
I haven't
anything.
Seen anything either.
And we questioned her a little bit and got the same response. Senator Higgins is very dedicated to cutting our dependence on foreign oil, period. I mean, that was about all of her response. And so we ended up, we gave her a CD which had 2,500 somewhere in that neighborhood signatures. They were collected off the internet about stopping the XL pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something we were able to do. And, of course, that's only a small part of the over 600,000 that actually were collected. So
well, good.
That's the sum total of what went on there, really.
Okay, good to know. You've been working, aside from, working with Occupy, with we know about the tar sands and fracking, you've been doing something with flash mobs. Tell us about that. That seems to be... flash mobs are really interesting to me. I've never seen a live one, but I have seen many.
I guess you'd have
many
to, be, have to know
video.
Somebody or just yeah. happen to be there in the right
See,
mall
right.
at the right time. Well, we in New York, we do them mostly on the street, although we have done stuff inside of stores. We have... now, one group that I work with is does all its work on the Palestine-Israel question, and we happen to have an accidental staff of talented people. We have actually a choreographer who can go to the video of Lady Gaga or anybody else, pick out all the moves. She practiced on sixth graders that she teaches in gym class. She teaches dance. So she can teach them to us, not as well, of course. We don't learn it as well as the sixth graders. Yeah. But we make an effort. And so we get a line of dancers out there, and we'll blast some music out, or in some cases I'll do it with guitar.
Okay.
And we do a lot of sing-alongs that are parodies. So we did this thing last year called an off-Broadway tour, where we went around to all our different boycott targets, whether it's a cafe or it's Best Buy because they're selling this and that and the other.
Uh-huh.
Or then we'll go over to the young women's sort of makeup type store, and they're selling the Ahava beauty creams with the Dead
oh,
Sea
right.
mud and
yes.
whatever it is that
yes.
we're mad about. We're going around not buying 16 different things in one day. So, but we have a song and a dance for each one of these, and we're traveling around with this mob, mob justice that we're doing up and down the streets of New York. And then into the store, you may have seen them where they have brass bands, which we have occasionally had. We've got a band up there called the Rude Mechanical Orchestra that's joined forces with us, and they are coming out and... that really takes over when you've got a trombone and a couple of baritone horns there. That
I would
kind of
think
thing.
So.
Then,
yeah.
then you are in charge of the store.
Okay. Have you ever been asked to leave?
Mm-hmm. Well, they always ask us to leave. You have to assign somebody to talk to them and say, oh, yeah, well, it's only 2 minutes. Okay. And then we do it. And then maybe do it again. maybe not. It depends. Yeah, in fact, we had a cop. We got away with murder with some cops, which is turning the tables. They, we have people that we assign who have a special talent of talking to cops and acting all innocent with them.
Okay.
It's not me. I don't have that. But I'm over here with a guitar, and they actually kind of try to peg me for the leader because without the instrument, it falls apart. Yeah. And if there isn't a band, then they just go for that one guy.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, if you've got all these people, mostly women about my age, you know, getting up there, and they're very sweet, just while they're talking to the cops, they're sweet. And, you know, it's hard to, like, act like they're a criminal element when they're saying, oh, but it's just a little song and dance. And we'll be done right away before you know it.
Okay.
This kind of thing.
What other responses are you getting to it? I mean, I love this idea, this sort of creativity, and that what is it? Creative activities are something you've been very interested in for a long time.
Well, of course, you can be creative without it being artistic. I always tell people, don't call it creative activities, really, because we're just looking at artistic things here. We're looking at song and dance. You can be creative with your strategy.
Well, that's true.
Look at what they did in Egypt.
Okay.
Look what they did with the internet, and what people are still doing all over the world is certainly.
It's not strictly artistic, but it is creative.
Yeah. Well, everything's an art, I suppose, if you're being creative.
Right.
So, but in terms of the arts, we have the fine arts, and then we have what we do, which is sort of the gross arts that you can do out in the street without being quite on pitch. I mean, one person might be on pitch, and the other might be somewhere near it, right? We don't audition for, you know, like the best. Maybe later we'll gussy it up for the internet version a little bit.
Okay.
So when you look at these flash mobs on YouTube, sometimes what you're seeing is the actual footage, but some of the singing may have been dubbed in later.
Oh,
and
I didn't
not just
know
because
that.
You can sing it better if you get a second chance, but because you can sing it right on the microphone.
Okay.
If we go into a place or outdoors and we've got one recording device, and it's right in front of the people that are singing as opposed to over by the dancers, well, you get a fighting chance. But, you know, if you're going to have it up there for more than a week on YouTube or somewhere before they yank it down for copyright violations, you might as well have good quality on it.
Okay, good.
Right, but it's a balance between that sense of live, this really happened, versus the quality that you need. Like, I've heard people have put stuff up there that you can't even hear it.
Yeah.
And then they don't even bother to put the lyrics up there for you to look at or something.
Yeah, I actually clicked on one that looked interesting recently. I don't even remember what it was. The images looked interesting, but no sound came through. And so
nothing.
I just,
well,
you know,
now that, they did that to me once. YouTube did that to me. They took, I had a very long piece about New Orleans that was a lot of pictures after Katrina. But all the songs I used were recordings of old songs about floods and blues things, old. And almost all of them were deemed copyright violations. Like, I didn't have permission. Not like I was making money, but, you know, just the very use. I mean, if you could go find a person and they would say, I'd be honored, but what if they're dead? Then they're not that honored.
Yeah.
So they left it up there and silenced it. And you're watching all these pictures, and that's nice, but the music was gone.
Yeah, gone, yeah. But this, looking for ways, one of the big struggles we have now is actually how do we create some sort of, or how do we galvanize enough people that we actually get, you know, can get some effective actions taken. And the internet's being used heavily for that, and you're touring a lot, right? And how are you finding, what kind of response are you finding?
Well, you know, it's a, I know the formula. It's two parts desperation, one part creativity, and maybe three parts inspiration, which means that, like, if you take Occupy as an example, people have to break down the fear factor. This is what they talk about in Egypt. We broke through the fear with Tahrir. That was the essential thing. And then all over the Arab world, it became, okay, dictators are nothing. We're not afraid anymore. Even if we die, you know, we're going to go do it. Okay, so that became one element is, like, the second element is hope. So people in this country sometimes don't have it because we're notoriously lacking in community since November 1980 when Reagan was elected. You know, we've gone into more of the mall thing than the downtown thing than the public square thing, more of the privatization and consumerism thing than the community thing, right?
Right.
I just want to say as an aside that in this economic climate, you may have heard there are some malls that have a lot of stores closing. And it's a disaster because nobody wants to go to a mall with closed stores and empty stores in it. It's against the entire ethos of joy of consuming that you go there for, you being somebody not in this room, somebody who goes to the mall for this, you know. And so what they're doing is they're stuffing into these empty stores the things that they subtracted when they built the mall, gardening stores, teaching people how to garden, places to hang out, everything except, of course, demonstrating and making political points. That's still, it's still private property. But they're making these places into the new indoor town square.
Oh, yes.
Just by necessity.
Mm-hmm. Because they've actually done that right here in Chapel Hill with University Mall.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Someone had told me this morning, yes. What did they put in there?
Oh, they put in, they've got a theater group now. They have events. They'll have all kinds of, artistic events there where artists will be invited to show in the mall or around or in one of the empty stores and stuff. They'll set up a gallery you know, and there'll be that. But you're right. It's not political. It's not.
No, that's to come perhaps. But so then, you know, breaking through fear. In this country, it's not so much about fear but about hope. People don't have hope. Younger people are used to what we see, what we have. They don't have a conception of popular struggle until it pops up. So that's what's corrected by Occupy, is you get a sense of coming together. And then you have to cross the next Rubicon, which is, yeah, but is this going to go anywhere after our initial sputtering of energy and outrage? Okay, fine, we're outraged, but are we going somewhere in terms of creativity? Will we go to bump to another level? So then you have to, it's not in the press all the time, but people go off when they're evicted from these squares or when it's winter, and then they go do some, help people avoid evictions or try to deal with evictions in which, and foreclosures. In that situation, you're finding that the Occupy people are getting educated by their contact with the new kind of people they never had any truck with, perhaps, depending on whose eviction and whose foreclosure it is, right? So, but it's a thing that pushes these people and brings their energy up because they are they're rolling with the creativity to be able to bounce to the next thing. And now in New York, they're moving into every week they're in a different park. They set up their whole shop daytime, not nighttime, or a church over here, and there's music and there's meetings, and some doctors are coming in and talking about healthcare policy. And so it's very open and inclusive. And they're starting to have relations with pre-existing groups and people over 20 who have already been activists on something for maybe years or generations, right? So there's interchange now. Then the New York Occupy Wall Street people got in a big biodiesel bus and went off on a tour of cities around the Northeast to get to know and meet and establish these networks face-to-face with the Occupy people in other places and exchange ideas. So that when they have done that, then you have this network of people that feel responsible to each other and have worked out some lines to think along together. Whether you can surmount the short attention span that results from the fact that it's not in the headlines anymore, and so this is a question. So like out in New Jersey, there's Occupy Bergen County. Okay, it's an affluent county, but there's a lot of older activist folks there who do a lot of local politics, but they want to identify with Occupy. But they don't know whether it's still going on or not because they're not tapped in. They're not in the city. They can't walk out. They can't find the youth-oriented alternative newspapers, or they don't listen to that radio station, or they can't walk down the street and see where these people are gathered. Or they're not good enough with the internet to go and see, oh, look at all these meetings that are scheduled. Every day, meetings, right? So this is a conundrum that the people who are really tuned in are a certain number of people, and the other people want to be brought along and want to stay in touch but aren't sure it's even really there. That's a communications question.
Okay, too. Yeah, I was just thinking that sounds like an issue for of communications or outreach, you know, and are there groups? Is that part of what's happening with Occupy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're doing with radio. Yeah. I know they do a lot on the internet, and for a lot of people that does work. I mean, I know where to go to find out all these meetings I'm avoiding because I'm actually not that into meetings these days. But they do have work groups, and they have a music work group, and then they have a music guild where musicians talk about their own role in things. Uh-huh. They talk and they talk and they talk. I already talked for about 20 years, so. I mean, I can talk without other people talking. You can see that.
Okay, good. We need to. Need to take a minute and make our announcements.
Well. What's your timeline?
I'm good. I can sit here for a little bit.
Oh, you can. Okay. Yeah. No, okay. Great. Well, shall we, Dick? Or
sure.
I'm waiting for a signal, but I because like.
Well, I was waiting. I was figuring on doing it as he finished. It would be about the midpoint of the program, but he's
but if he,
going
if
on
you
longer,
don't have
so.
Any rush. We
no, no. Let's talk more
bit.
or do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then we're just gonna. We've got a couple of announcements for you all. On February 20th, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., NC Peace Action invites you to meet local, state, and federal elected officials to call for a change in priorities. There is a bus leaving for Durham and Chapel Hill. A bus is leaving at 9:15 from the Home Depot parking lot at 3701 Mount Moriah Road. That's off 15501. And at 9:45 a.m. from the parking lot behind Pomodoro's and the Courtyard Marriott, 1815 Front Street at I-85 and the Hillendale Road intersection. For more information or to reserve a seat, visit the NC Peace Action, one word, www.ncpeaceaction.org website, or call 919-381-5969. And again, that's a public forum with elected officials on the 20th, Monday, February 20th, 11 a.m. So contact ncpeaceaction.org or 919-381-5969. The next thing is Thursday, February 23rd, the annual Spectrum of Democracy Awards Dinner will take place at the Raleigh Marriott City Center. And this is hosted by the North Carolina Center for Voter Education. Each year they honor the unsung heroes who are striving to make democracy better. I would take issue with that. I don't think we have a democracy, but I understand a lot of people want to believe we do. This year the lineup of recipients is Jack Betts, former Charlotte Observer columnist. He's receiving the Robert Morgan Service Award. Judy Caudill, former Lincoln County Elections Director, outstanding public servant. Ricky McDevitt, who's a civic teacher at Madison County High School, and he gets the Outstanding Citizen Award. And then the Raleigh-based TV station WRAL receives the Outstanding Media Organization Award. So again, that's February 23rd for a great evening honoring those who work so hard to improve democracy in North Carolina. The event begins at 6 p.m. with a cocktail hour and registration, followed by a dinner program at 7. The Raleigh Marriott City Center at 500 Fayetteville Street in Raleigh. Tickets are $50 for adults, $35 for students or military, and they can be purchased online or by mailing a check to the North Carolina Center for Voter Education. Go to the NC Voter Ed, one word, ncvotered.com/spectrum on the website. And, okay, we're back with Dave Lippin, who is here for just a brief time here at back in Chapel Hill and performing tonight at the Community Church on Purefoy Road, right there near the UNC Hospitals area. Mm-hmm.
Sponsored by Peace at no.
The
Coalition
Peace and Justice.
For Peace and Justice.
Yeah.
Right. Coalition for Peace and Justice and the Balance and Accuracy in Journalism.
Okay. All right, Dave, do you have something for us? What were you looking at?
Oh, well, you know,
after...
there was lots and lots of songs that have come out of the Occupy movement.
Uh-huh.
Everybody I meet says, "Have you heard the Occupy song?" I guess they're all called that. So I did some of those, and then I thought, you know, I'm going to do one that nobody else is going to do. So I was thinking about this cop from Philly, retired cop, Captain Ray Lewis, came down and demonstrated in his uniform and got arrested. Yeah? And he said, well, I'll tell you in the song. He said, some very interesting things. Captain Ray Lewis was a very good cop, a very, 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 very good cop. You know, at least I had to. Guts to write an original tune, you see? He tried to build community as much as they'd allow in the police force where he endorsed getting to know instead of a show of weapons.
down at Wall Street. He appeared so neat, and everyone designed their own picket sign. His red NYPD, don't be Wall Street mercenaries. If democracy's a coal mine, we're the canaries. These protesters are right, and they have my strongest backing. Would have been here sooner, but I was trying to stop the fracking. Don't defend the 1%, said Ray. Come all ye cops and hear what I say. People are starving and freezing in the dark, and here you are worried about dirt in the park. These are public officers we're meant to be trusting. Instead, they're obnoxious, ignorant, arrogant, and disgusting. Cop on the beat is a two-bit player. Wanna know why they're beating? Ask the mayor, jacking up the rents. Then they take away your tents. Here's what you gotta do. And this is the chorus, and everybody can learn this real quick, I'm sure. Get rid of the power of corporate America. Make them impotent, or they'll continue to exploit and manipulate the working class. Even the cops who don't realize they're exploited, they'll arrest me, but I'll be right back here. So join us in the protest, and afterwards we'll have a beer.
I love it.
And that'll be I have a specialty that I've developed in recent years, for lack of any other specialty, which is a genre of music that's called the impossible sing-along.
Yes. Okay, I was just thinking, wait, who can learn this real quickly? Oh, my gosh, excuse me.
And we're live.
We just turned it off. Yes, we are live. All right.
But I project my lyrics on the wall or something, or hand them out. Wherever I go, I got one or the other. In the park, I have to hand them out. And indoors, we can have a projector. Do you remember what they used to say when teachers used to show movies in class?
Uh-huh.
And then that expression came up, teacher can't teach, projector broken. So that could happen to me. Not tonight. Tonight we have two projectors.
Right, okay, yes. All right, good.
One of the interesting things about Occupy, besides its relation to the Arab Spring and other worldwide movements, is something I think is just starting, which is its relation to all the groups that you see in the social forums, like we had in Atlanta in 07 and in Detroit last year, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
Those
mm-hmm.
are two that I went to, and went to one internationally. But you run into groups that you never hear about, groups of not the 99%, but the lower 10%, let's say, in terms of economics, right? I mean, I've met single mothers from Louisville who have a living situation and a political group together, and they, like, crusade around the issues mm-hmm. of the single mothers in Louisville. And there's all kind of groups like that around the country that mm-hmm. occupiers who have just become aware of the economic inequality in society and the bankster scandals don't know that these groups exist. And they're learning that once they start getting involved in foreclosure stuff, which, as we know, was like the forward edge of the banking crisis, was, well, screw all the poor people. Let's just take their houses in some casino kind of operation, right? So a lot of young people stand to learn a lot real quick now if they are in touch with those people. Mm-hmm. And since Occupy spread all over the country, chances are good, and maybe it's happened and I don't know about it. But I see it in New York. I mean, when you see the interviews with people who have never done political stuff in their life, but they understand perfectly well, this is called wisdom from below, right? They can see, when you're looking up, you know what's walking all over you, right?
Yeah.
You know what happened to your house. It's pretty much all you need to know.
Yeah.
So, a lot of cross-class education I see coming down the pike.
That's encouraging, because I know there's some cross-generational, because I participated in a Deep Green Resistance reading. That was the book, Deep Green Resistance, by Derek Jensen, Eric McVeigh, and Larry Keith. And there was a reading group here at the Internationalist Bookstore, and it was mostly very young people, but a few of us older ones, too, who were there. And it was quite an eye-opening experience to listen to their view on things and and to realize where we disagree. They call us the elders.
We disagree on that, don't we?
No, actually, I don't have any problem with that at all. But they are listening, and they're respectful of our experience.
Well, I figured out 20 years ago, that would be 1990, let's say, Well, it's 92 now. Hmm. I figured out that the kids then who were coming up into politics, well, take a look at me. Let's see. Now, I'm not, but let's say I was from 1960. Okay, let me start over. I'm from 1968, let's say. That's when I was at the peak of my first heyday. I've had four.
Okay.
My first heyday, 1968, okay? Now, that is now 40 years ago. Well, at that time, we couldn't relate to any of those people from the dark ages of when the world was black and white, because we know that because we saw it on the movies and TV. Back during the 30s, when they had an upsurge that almost overturned society here, that was my parents' youth, right? Yeah. So that's a generation, let's call that a generation, 30. So what are we to the kids today? I'm twice removed now.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder they call us names like that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I don't find anything disrespectful in elders. I mean, we are the
right.
elders.
Finally achieved some respect, whether we deserved it or not.
That's right. They don't agree. You know, there are quite a number of them here that just want to throw everything out and, you know, start from scratch. And
that's idealism. You need to go through that for a week or a generation.
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell you a lot of things I could throw out. Everything. I'll entertain that notion.
Yeah, I'm now having my first grandchild. It's a little harder these days, and I'm beginning to look differently at things. I'm finding at this point in my life that have you ever heard of Amit Goswami? He's a nuclear physicist who is now called the quantum activist, and he's very interesting because he actually is very good at explaining how quantum physics supports a new kind of, a notion that consciousness is the ground of all being, and that ways for us to change consciousness so that we stop destroying each other and the planet, and, you know, and he's a really an amazing man, but for me, that's become more important as I've gotten older, too. You know, I moved away from it through my youth and middle age and such, but now as I'm getting older, I'm finding the spiritual link. Connection.
Well, consciousness has to be interactive with social reality.
Yep.
People learn from both directions,
that's
hopefully,
right.
But some people think of themselves as more one than the other. But yeah, I mean, one thing I've learned is you're not just going to change the structure of who owns the means of production and expect that's going to solve anything.
Yeah, that's
right. But it couldn't hurt. Oh, yes, it could. But anyway, it could help, though.
Yeah.
It could help if we could imagine or envision other relations like. That's why we have to keep saying to people, okay, so shall we privatize the police and the fire departments? And if you didn't pay, and this has happened, if you didn't pay your fire department fee, then they don't save your house from burning down. And this has already happened, right? And then people say, oh, no one would do that.
Right. Don't want that. And, well, I also think, I mean, I think that we do have to realize that we are one, that we are definitely part of a greater consciousness.
Well, you're talking about the internet, right?
We're not talking material. That's it. We've all been taught, our science and history and everything has been also materially focused. I mean, so, you know, about matter, that matter is the ground of all being.
No, I'm talking about cloud computing. It's all up there. We're all in it. We backed up our computers to the cloud, and Google is stealing all our friends.
Okay.
But meanwhile, I'm just saying that this latest wave of upsurge of revolutionary activity all over the world is fueled by the communication possibilities.
It is fueled by the communication.
And there's an element of, it's not all that you're talking about consciousness, but it is an element.
It is.
People are aware, they learn hope, and they learn lack of fear, and they learn from each mm-hmm. other, even though they'll never meet. Right?
Yeah, and it is. And I think people like Goswami and Thomas Berry and a number of others are saying, though, just think of the massive changes we could make if we really could learn that we all are one, that we really are, you know, from the smallest bits of matter, you know, up to, it's not just the physical being, but there is a spiritual connection that we have with this. And if we destroy our enemies, we will ultimately destroy ourselves. If we destroy this planet, we will destroy ourselves.
And most people don't throw their garbage in their backyard. There are exceptions, but in general, the trend is away from that. And so if you think of the world as your backyard, then you wouldn't throw your garbage there, especially if it was radioactive.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I hope that's I hope that's changing.
Well, in the last period in our lifetimes, we've seen a tremendous growth in the concept of an international society that where you're responsible to the planet. Doesn't mean that the people in power want to do it, but it means that it's an understood human right to have a planet, as is education, as is we've seen in the last 5-10 years in terms of gay rights in this country. Mm-hmm. Tremendous changes. So, and I think that the genie is out of the bottle. Of course there are setbacks. But when people have learned this, you have a new assumption. And you will have people so mad and they'll come to you and they will say, a living wage is not a right. Education is not a right. Healthcare is not a right. But they're desperate. You can feel it, right? I mean, it's fine. That's their belief. But they're receding. That's my optimistic theory.
Okay, good. Well, we need optimism, too. Optimism along with practical optimism, I guess.
I mean, they wouldn't say, get the U.S. out of the United Nations unless there was some potential there in that body where the world meets to overcome the U.S. hegemony of it and the governmental hegemony over the people there.
Yes.
Right? So that now you have structures there that you didn't used to in terms of NGOs, and you have like Palestine, which isn't even a state, has now got certain rights to put forth certain things. You now have international criminal courts. And, of course, people fight tooth and nail against these things. And, of course, they're imperfect institutions full of bureaucracies. But yet and still, they're an improvement over them not having been there in the past because they're a forum where we're able to say these are our rights and we're not backing down.
Yeah, you're right.
And it touches on what you're saying about our responsibility to each other and to our environment, that's the consciousness. What do they say? As long as one person is not free, then I am not free. Right. That kind of thing, which is not new, but it is growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I dare anybody to deflate my optimism. Next caller.
You know, we should try that sometime, having a real caller, live call-in.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah. But, so, you are... What are you doing? I mean... You're touring now, but is there any particular, you said fracking and the Occupy and this, do you have any
projects? Tonight and Gainesville, Florida are two peas in a pod in the sense that there's a strong Middle East organizational connection to these two events. So that in addition to explaining every issue that there is, mm-hmm. which I take care of in the first set and the first half of the second set, and in addition to just having a good time with some of the Occupy sing-alongs and this kind of stuff, I go into a special focus on that because I am an activist on that as well, on Palestine-Israel affairs. Palestine and Israel are having an affair? What happened? So because these organizations that sponsor it and their people that they bring out do it, have a special interest and want to hear, well, what's going on in New York and how do you feel it's coming along? Been a lot of changes in the last year, a lot of motion on the ground and there and here on these topics. So for those two events in particular, we'll have like that extra special focus.
Okay, all right. And
then we relax people by doing another Occupy song because people love to talk about something where they don't have to think and worry because everybody agrees because all 99% of us agree about that.
Right.
Once you start talking about anything more complicated than Burma... Then you get opinions.
God forbid.
Right.
Right. Imagine. Are you going to have copies of your CDs and stuff?
Yeah, I got CDs tonight. I've even got a little songbook. We just came out in New York with a songbook on these are some of the street songs, basically. The various boycott, the movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions on Israeli apartheid has spawned a creativity internationally to compare with the Occupy thing.
We have,
of course, it's all me, you know that. Oh, wait, and that choreographer. No, there's songs, I can't tell you how many times Hava Nagila has been rewritten. You put a whole songbook of new lyrics to that one song.
Okay.
And that doesn't really infuriate people so much as if you rewrote the Israeli national anthem. Now, I read about a law the other day they wanted to pass here that you couldn't sing the U.S. national anthem wrong. Like, you couldn't change the words, you couldn't sing it badly like Roseanne, you know. You had to do it right or they're going to fine you. Yeah,
oh, no.
Some state somewhere. And it's not even their business. It's got nothing to do with any stuff. But anyway, we put together a songbook just the other day, and it's got stuff on Ahava, the beauty cream boycott, Caterpillar. I've actually quit buying Caterpillar bulldozers entirely over the last couple of months.
You have quit buying.
Yeah, I gave it up.
Right.
Cold turkey.
Wow, cold turkey. Yeah, it's wonderful.
And I once wrote 6 Christmas songs just about Caterpillar. And
I remember
this is a little,
Caterpillar, yeah.
A little, and then the TIAA CREF campaign, which is just getting off the ground, which is it's the largest, I think, public employees' pension fund. They got big offices in New York. And lots of teachers are in it, lots of nurses.
There's also a headquarters in Charlotte. We went down there and demonstrated in August or September last year. But because they were having some kind of a big meeting, and so we went down and waved some signs around. And
yeah, well, Charlotte is Charlotte is. I mean, New York is the Charlotte of the North. Can I tell you? That was a save.
Okay.
No, but that's that campaign, which was started by Jewish Voice for Peace, is focused not on an entire fund, but on 5 companies within it that they're invested in, that have committed and are committing particular transgressions, and that includes Caterpillar and some people that are involved in building technical stuff around the apartheid wall. In fact, on the Mexican wall, too, same people. Israeli company with an American subsidiary. And several other companies. Hewlett-Packard is Northrop Grumman. These are all, in the portfolio. So people are trying to focus not on take out everything that has anything to do with Israel, because that's pretty much everything, but look at these 5 because their crimes are manifest and we can name them and we can say what they're doing and continuing to do. And so what we want is socially responsible investment. And this is what TIAA-CREF stands for, supposedly. Their motto is for the greater good, right? And so they have what you call in social investment a screen. You have a screen for tobacco, right? You have a screen for nuclear weapons. You have a screen for military in general. Whatever it is that you want to screen out, and somebody can come to you with their pension and say, I want this. Well, they kind of do that. We're trying to get them to increase and go into the controversial area of trying to stop the colonization of Palestine, which is a military act perpetrated by our tax dollars. Then that's what we're getting at there.
Wow,
so that is
nice.
That is the divestment side of the boycott and divestment equation, and it's really just getting rolling, but one of the great things about it is that the people who have their pensions in this are people who are prone to think about these kinds of things, socially responsible investing, more than people who don't think about their investments at all, period. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to say bricklayers can't read a book. I'm just saying teachers, nurses, a lot of these people, they get it.
That's good.
So that's where we're going with that, and that's a little songbook that we're spreading around. And there are songs that I didn't write in here, which means they're actually singable.
Okay. Are we going to see Wild Bill Bale out tonight?
Wild Bill will be there. He'll be unsingable.
Okay.
Yeah, he takes care of his own. He doesn't really care if anybody sings along.
No.
He barely cares if they listen, because he's got the law on his side. What does he care? He's the bankster sort of. He's speaking for the 1%. In fact, he's got his own 1% button he wears now.
Oh, okay.
Great.
I was going to mention I launched my new revised website today. My first website was made in 1999, right here in Chapel Hill, by a guy that I hired. And my current webmaster took a look at it and said, "Yeah, you know, that looks kind of 90s." I'm like, voice dripping with disdain. 90s. I thought, well, maybe that's a type of architecture, like that's Elizabethan,
right?
French, you know. But we redid it, and one of the things we did was we put right up on the front page a video blog of Wild Bill Bailout. He's talking.
Yeah.
He's actually in his first one explaining the Occupy movement and his answer to it, which he calls Occupy Everything.
Yes.
And he's sitting inside of this movie with all this stuff that's happening that comes from the 30s and the 50s and the 80s and all this stuff. And it's a wonderful little black and white movie that raconteur Chris Chandler from Georgia made for me. And so I just plopped myself down in the middle. Excuse me, Wild Bill, right down in the middle of that. And I'm going to redo that and make a new one every so often, right? But you go to the site and or you go to my YouTube channel.
I saw that blog.
Okay, so that's today. It's a red letter day.
Oh, is that new today?
It's my it's a Valentine's Day massacre of my old site.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we're going to have to wrap it up here pretty soon because I've got to make the switch over.
Okay. All right, Dave, let's give your website.
Yes, DaveLippman.com, like it always was. Two P's, one N. And can I go out with a half a verse here?
Sure.
This is actually when we went to the Detroit Social Forum, Code Pink went over to this neighborhood where there's virtually nobody living, a lot of empty houses. Detroit is what America will be if we don't occupy in a hurry. And they got permission from the people running this huge, the whole neighborhood is an art project, paintings of all kinds up and down the houses and the sidewalks. It's all art. It's called the Heidelberg Yard. And they got permission to bury a pink Hummer there, in the yard there, symbolic of the end of this consciousness of greed, and I want to have a bigger, tougher car to roll over your little one. And then there's a nice pink bicycle sitting right next to it, you know, only slightly buried. And they came to me and said, write the song. So it went something like this. In the summertime when pollution is high, you can drive a Hummer and darken the sky. When the weather's hot, we got oil wars and pollution on our mind. Have a drink, have a drive, go see whose pocket's being lined. If your daddy's rich, he can make oil plumes. If your daddy's poor, you can suck on a fume. Speed along the lane, weighs 3 tons or 3 tons and 25. When the sun goes down, no one's looking, so you're better on a bike. They're threat people, they're dirty and mean. They're civilian tanks for civilian marines. They need so much oil, they destroy most of the Caribbean Sea. Don't make us happy, life's for destroying. Yeah, that's their philosophy. Even I can't sing that.
Oh, that's great. I love that. That's good. Well, Dave, thank you so much. I'm so looking forward to this evening.
Thank you. Well, come on down, everybody. I'll make you sing that one.
That's wonderful. Okay, tonight at the Community Church in Chapel Hill on Purefoy Road, Dave Lippman, come out.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dave. See you there. The previous broadcast was recorded 1 hour ago for presentation at this time. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom wake-up call, and you've been listening to Dave Lippman, who will be at the community church tonight, beginning at 7:30, presenting himself and at least one of his alter egos, Wild Bill Bailout, and you might even see a little shrub. You never know. The world's only singing CIA agent. So this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Hour, and we are WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. In addition to the Women's International League bringing you this show, our show is underwritten by Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street. Not only a bookstore, but a community resource, educational center, and all around interesting place to visit. You'll find a lot of stuff there that you won't find at the big stores, in terms of books, magazines, art, and music. So stop by 405 West Franklin Street and tell them that the Women's International League sent you. We're going to go out now with a little bit more Dave Lippman. This is something from his new album about the BP and Massey mess ups.
I won't be making a trip to visit Tom Blankenship in his prison cell, and I don't wish him well. won't visit Tony Hayward. He's way too wayward, though seeing him in jail is my holy grail. No, it isn't fine to operate a mine when coal is the cancer of the earth, but to sacrifice 29 to increase your bottom line, brother, you're asking for it. Into the patrol car, hey, Officer Flory. I won't be making a trip to visit Tom Blanker's ship in his prison cell, and I don't wish him well. Won't visit Tony Hayward, he's way too wayward. Don't see him in jail, here's my holy grail. And the only proper plea for drilling in the sea with no referee is insanity. But on second thought, I guess we really ought to press charges, including reckless endangerment in the presence of clear and present danger. He went straight to manslaughter, sea slaughter, shore slaughter, killing of the land and air and water. So everybody, I won't be making a trip to visit Tom Blanker's ship in his prison cell, and I don't wish him well. Won't visit Tony Hayward, he's way too wayward. I don't see him in jail, it's the holy grail. Don't see him in jail, it's the holy grail. Don't see him in jail.
Little bit of the Dave Lippman to take you out, and that was probably in his character of Wild Bill Bailout. We'll talk to you again next week, and I think it'll probably be something perhaps related to fracking, or we may have some news on the tar sands oil front, but in any case, we'll look forward to having you with us. Thank you.